So first of all, the shir is sponsored this evening by Howard and Miriam Fruchtuk to commemorate the yahrzeit of Howard's father, Ephraim Fishel ben Menachem Mendel. Our divrei Torah should be le'iloi nishmaso. So I wanted to talk the last shir. We'll talk about a bris milah. So I wanted to talk about some of the kibudim at a bris milah. We alluded to some of them last week, but just to touch on some of them. So the first one that we notice at a bris is what we call the kvater. What we call the kvater or the kvaterin. Usually you have the female kvater and the male kvater. If you look at source number one, it's brought in the Maharil in the Minhagim, Ha'isha Shehi Baalas Bris, Litol Hayeled Mehayoledas. Now this is an interesting term, Baalas Bris, and we'll see a little bit more about it as we go through the shir. Baalas Bris implies that this is something, you know, integral to the bris. This is she's a balabasta, right? She's a Baalas Bris. She's somebody that that's really a part of this mitzvah. So what does she do? Litol ha'yeled mehayoledes. She takes the baby from the yoledes, from the mother, leholicho lebeis hakneses lehimo, to bring the baby to the shul in order to get a bris milah. Tolichenu ad pesach hakneses. So he describes that she brings the baby to the entranceway of the shul, and at that point, generally, her husband then takes the baby from her and brings the baby to the avi haben, who then honors the next person with whatever the next kibud is. So it's an interesting kibud, the kvater. Now it's become the general practice, general custom, to give this honor to a couple that has not yet been blessed with children. Right? That seems to be the practice, to give it to a couple that has not yet been blessed with children. And this is a way of a segula, some sort of a segula that they should be blessed with children. Now it's very interesting because this seems to be widespread. However, the source is very unclear. There's no clear source that says anywhere that this is a segula to have children, that this honor is a segula to have children. Even the honor itself of kvater, you know, the earliest sources are not that early. I mean, we're talking...
Where is the word
kvater? It's a good question. I'm not sure. There's actually a question I saw. I didn't have time to look into it, but there's a question about the word also. There's a question as to where that, what it's called. In different places it was called different things. Now we all call it kvater, but I'm not sure where it comes from. I'm not sure what the origin of the word is. But this is the segula that's known. Now it's interesting. I've heard a couple of different explanations over time. Obviously they're doing something significant. They're bringing the baby to the mitzvah, to the bris milah. So that's certainly something significant. It's not an insignificant thing that they're doing. But why that should be a segula for a bris milah is not so clear. Some want to say it's based on a medrash. I've heard others say that it's actually a mistake, and it's not really the kvater at all that's a segula. But there's apparently a medrash somewhere that talks about that if you help out with the se'uda, which we'll talk a little bit more about the se'uda, but if you help out with the se'uda at a bris, so that's really the segula. So some suggest, forget the kvater, but if a person really wants a segula, you really want a zechus to have children, so go help out with the se'uda, go help set up, or help clean up, or help serve at the se'uda, and that'll help you. But be it as it may, that's the general custom, and that's the general general concept. Yeah.
If the Yoledes is the new mother, who's the Baalas Bris?
The Baalas Bris is referring to this woman who's the Kvaterin, who's the woman who's bringing the baby from the Yoledes to the shul.
Okay.
We touched a little bit last week about on the Kisei Shel Eliyahu, this custom that we have to set aside, to designate a chair as the Kisei Shel Eliyahu. There are midrashim that talk about the fact that Eliyahu comes to every bris based on the Zohar and other things. Eliyahu comes to the bris. And it's very interesting. I saw a fascinating Orchos Chaim who says that that the origin of this, he quotes Rav Nissim Gaon, right? The very early source from the Gaonic period, even before the Amoraim. So he quotes Rav Nissim Gaon, who says in source number two, Higidu li zekenim shebedor, says the elders of the generation told me, Shebiyom shechnisani lebris marona alba aluf zal kishenichnas lebeis hakneses va'ani biyado. He says when I had my mila and my father brought me into the shul, right, with me in his arms, Yoshav sha achas al oso kisei hamuchan, he sat for a moment in that kisei shel Eliyahu. Excuse me. And then he stood up, and he put me on the next chair, which was the kisei of the mila. That's where the mila was going to take place. So after he left the bris, they asked him, you know, why'd you do that? I guess it wasn't a standard practice in those days. We never saw anyone do that. He says, this is a tradition that I have from the elders. This is Eliyahu's kisei, this is his chair. Eliyahu, we know, is the malach habris, he's the angel of the bris. Says maybe we get a bracha from Eliyahu, right? Everybody's running around all you know, always to gedolim to get bracha from this gadol and that gadol. Eliyahu Anavi is coming to your bris. Get a bracha from Eliyahu Anavi. So therefore, I sat down with the baby on Eliyahu's chair, right? Hopefully, he wouldn't get upset that someone was sitting in his chair. But I sat down with the baby in Eliyahu's chair, and hopefully he'll get a bracha. Now, nowadays, we don't have that practice, right? The Avi HaBen does not sit with the baby on his lap, but what we do is we actually take the baby and we place the baby down on the chair. But it's along the same lines, and the idea behind that is that Eliyahu is coming, you know, where we're asking Eliyahu, in a sense, to bless this child, to give him a bracha, and he should get some chachma based on that bracha. Okay. So we have Kvater, we have the Kisei Shel Eliyahu. I mentioned last week that the Kibud, the honor of Kisei Shel Eliyahu, is a very significant honor. As I said last week, it's not a speaking part, so sometimes, you know, it's not as prominent as the brachos at the end or as the Kriyas Shem, which we'll talk about. But it's a very chashuv kibud, because here, you know, this is you're essentially enabling this child to get a bracha from Eliyahu Anavi. That's a very chashuv thing. So it's a special honor, this honor of Kisei Shel Eliyahu. When I was in yeshiva, so many of the when I was learning in the Kolel in Eretz Yisrael, so many of the avreichim in the Kolel, if they would make a bris, they would do it in yeshiva, because that's the place, you know, that's where their friends are and their rebbeim. So it's a convenient place to make the bris. And there, when you do it in yeshiva, so the kibudim, half of them are already taken. Why? Because the Rosh Yeshiva gets the sandikos, gets the sandik, which we'll talk about in a minute. And the mashkiach of the yeshiva gets brachos. It's standard, you know, to honor the Rosh Yeshiva and the mashkiach. And then after that, you know, there's a little bit of wiggle room for your family or whatever. So generally, the third kibud, right? So you have the Rosh Yeshiva would get sandik, and the mashkiach would get the brachos. And then the third kibud, which was usually given to the person's rebbe, so he would give it to his rebbe, and usually it would be the kisei shel Eliyahu. That would be the third kibud. So it's a significant kibud. Okay, let's talk a little bit about this about the idea of being a sandik. So we're all familiar with this idea of being a sandik. Where does it come from? It's not so clear. There are midrashim, different midrashim. I didn't bring them down on the sheet, but there are different midrashim that talk about the fact that when Avram Avinu had a bris mila, Gavriel Hamalach was the sandik, you know, and different, you know, different midrashim like that. The Medrash in Tehillim quotes the pasuk of Kol Atzmosai Tomarna Hashem Yichamocha, right? Famous pasuk. This is the source of shuckling, right? By the way, just as an aside, right? There are people who shuckle during davening, so it comes from this pasuk: Kol Atzmosai Tomarna Hashem Yichamocha. We daven with all of our, body. Amar La Kodesh Baruch Hu, David Ma Ata Oseli. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to David, you know, what are you doing for me? You're telling me Kol Atzmosai Tomarna, that all of your limbs, all of your bones are singing out the praises of Hashem. You know, what are you really doing? Amar lo, ani ashabechacha b'chol evarai. So David HaMelech says, no, I'm HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't worry, I'm praising you with each and every one of my limbs. And he goes through the Medrash, it's a long Medrash. He goes through each and every body part and how he's dedicating that body part to the Ribono Shel Olam. When it comes to the lap, it comes to his knees, what does he say? Birkai kriyas birkayim b'tfila. Number one, I bow down on my knees when I daven. We don't bow down on our knees nowadays, right? We might bend our knees, but we don't bow down on our knees. But then he says, birkai aninase sandi kanus, right? Which is like the term of sandik or sandikous, right? So we say sandikous nowadays, but that's how it's printed in the Tehillim, in the Medrash Tehillim, sindi kanus. Liyaladim hanimolim al birkai. That's the way that my legs, that my lap, that my knees are calling out the praises of the Ribono Shel Olam by being a sandik at a bris. So you see that when a person acts as a sandik, You know, this is it's a form of praising Hashem. This is one of the most special mitzvahs that the Jewish people have, and here the mitzvah's happening literally on your lap. It's an incredible zechus. The Agos Maimonios writes that because of this, people really want this kibud. Right, this is something that it's very desirable. He says people want it, people desire this kibbutz. And not only that, but he writes, "V'lios baal bris, you're called a baal bris." We saw an allusion to that in source number one in the Maharil regarding the kvater, but here it's almost universal that this person is called a baal bris. In fact, we know that the three people that are considered to be celebrating a yontif on the day of a bris milah. Right, the Avi Aben, the father of the child, the Moel, and the Sandik. They don't right. They don't have to fast. They don't say Tachanun. You know, they don't say Tachanun and Mincha that day. I mean, it's a yontif for them. It's a yontif for them. So this person, there's a tremendous desire on the part of people to actually do this mitzvah. It's a very special mitzvah. The Rama writes in source number 5, based on an Or Zaruah, that when we choose a sandik for our child, it should be somebody chashuv, it should be somebody significant. V'yesh le'adam lachzor u'lahader achar mohel u'babris hayoser tov v'tzadik. So he talks about a moel also, right? You want a moel who's a big tzadik, a moel who's a tov v'tzadik. So Baruch Hashem, we have many in this community. We lost Rabbi Richmond as a moel in this community who was a big tzadik, but we have other tzadikim, other wonderful moelim in this community. But not only Moelim, but also Baal Bris. And here the Rambam, when he says Baal Bris, what's he referring to? Sandik. So when you choose a Sandik, it should be somebody Chashuv. You should try to get somebody who's a Yoser Tov, who's a Tzadik. When I was in Eretz Yisrael, I was learning in the yeshiva in Me'er Sha'arim, Rav Chaim Ilson's yeshiva called Derech HaTalmud. It doesn't exist anymore, but it was in Me'er Sha'arim. And Me'er Sha'arim is a very interesting place. I lived there for 3 years, a lot of interesting experiences. Meet a whole new category of people that I really hadn't gotten to know too well in my time in Great Neck. And Me'er Sha'arim, a few blocks away, lived Rav Eliyashiv. Rav Yosef Shalom Eliyashiv Zatzal lived a few blocks away. So I used to daven in his shtibel sometimes on Shabbos when my yeshiva wasn't in session. So he's the gadol that I feel like I didn't have a connection with him really, but I got to see him face to face. I saw him in action, you know, I heard him daven. You know, you feel a little bit of a connection to him. So one time, a friend of mine who was in the kol, I was a yeshiva bachar at the time. I was all of 18, 19. And a friend of mine who was married and learning there, he had a baby. So he had a baby boy, and he was making a bris in yeshiva. And lo and behold, who was the sandik? Rav Eliyashiv. I was blown away. I was shocked. It's a small little yeshiva. And of course, Rav Eliyashiv walks in, and everybody's snapping photos like it's the paparazzi. You know, you see all the flashes going. That's what everybody was focusing on, Rav Eliyashiv. Everybody forgot about the baby. But Rav Eliyashiv was the sandik, and I was kind of surprised that, you know, Rav Eliyashiv is Rav Eliyashiv. He's a gadol hador. You know, he's coming to some little yeshiva hole in the wall to be a sandik for somebody. He didn't know my friend. He had no connection to my friend, so why was he coming? So someone told me, no, he comes every day. He's a sandik somewhere. Right, he'll accept one kibbut a day of sandikos. One kibbut a day of sandikos. Obviously, it has to be local. He's not going to schlep to Be'er Sheva. It has to be, you know, within a close traveling distance. But he'll go within a certain circumference. You know, he'll go to be a sandik every day. Every day, one time. That's what he does. And this was the first person they called him, I guess, for that day. My friend, even though he didn't have a connection, so he came to my yeshiva and he acted as sandik. But it's you see that even Rav Eliyashiv. Right, who was the gadol hador, who was so busy with his time, but this is something that even he wanted to carve out some time in his schedule to be a sandik every day. I don't think we're going to get to that level of being a sandik every day, but you know, maybe once in a while. There's an interesting minhag, and I remember this from the time when I was in yeshiva, when I was in Baltimore, and the Rosh Yeshiva was a sandik, and that was, you know, kind of frequently, you know, people were having babies, and the Rosh Yeshiva would be a sandik. It was not an uncommon thing to have brisim in yeshiva. So the Maharil writes that at the time that a person is a sandik, in source number 6, he quotes the Maharil Segel, Kishenase bal bris, hayanoig atzmo lirchotz velitbo, lahachnis hatinok betahara lebris. He said, go to the mikvah. He said, go to the mikvah. He said, if a person is going to be a sandik, so you should be tovel first. You should go to the mikvah, go to do tevila first, so that you can bring this child into the bris of Avram Avinu, betahara. Not only that, but he said, "V'yomar gadol mitzvahs baal bris mi mitzvahs ha-moyel." And even being a sandik is even greater schus than being a moyel. Why? What's so great about being a sandik? Listen to what he says. Mipnei sheraglov nidmu lamizbeach. Because your legs are like a mizbeach. Your legs are like a mizbeach. Kilu maktir kitores lashamayim. You're doing this incredible mitzvah with your legs, as we discussed before, the Medrash and Tehillim, with your knees. So it's like you're being makriv a kitores. And therefore, Rabbeinu Peretz writes, may also tam kosev Rabbeinu Peretz alav hashalom. Masha'in koflin laseis banav lebal bris echad pa'amayim v'shalosh. He says, we have a hakpada, we're careful about something, that we don't honor the same person with being a sandik more than once. Within the same family. Right. You honor a person as sandik once, your next son, you have to honor someone else. You can't honor the same person. Why? Because it's such a chash of a kibbut. It's so special. It's like your legs are being the mizbeach. You have to share the wealth. Right? Spread the wealth. For each and every child, you have to choose a different sandik. You can't have the same sandik again. Based on the Gemara in Yuma, that says that a Kohen who got to be makriv the Ketores, the Ketores used to bring wealth to the Kohen that did it. It was a special segula for wealth. That's why people nowadays like to read the Pitumak Torahs after davening, because they feel like that's a segula for wealth. So each time, a different Kohen would get a chance to do it. It's a big schus. So you don't want to, have one person hogging this kibbut. So a different Kohen would get a chance to do it each and every time. So too, for one family, you have to honor a different person, a sandik, each and every time. Now, not everyone agrees to this. If you look at the Bir Hagra in source number 7, this is quoted, by the way. This is quoted by the Rambam, if I'm not mistaken. Comes the Bir Hagra, and he says, I don't like this comparison to the Kohen, the Gemara and Yuma. I don't like the whole business. Devarav ein lohem shachar. He says, these words will not see the light of day. These words do not see the light of day. There's no content really here. This is not true. Timkein my time may adam echa dafka. He says, number one, what does that do with the family? Right? If you're so worried that you want to spread the wealth, like by the Kohen who did the Ketores, so once a person serves as Sandik once, he should never be able to serve again as Sandik. Why are you telling me that the father has to choose a different person each time? It should be on the Sandik to say, I got it once already, no thank you, he can't do it ever again. We don't find that, first of all, says the Gra. Right, we find the hakpada on the family, that the family can't choose the same person again. But we don't find the hakpada on the sandik himself, that he can only serve once in his lifetime, and then he has to give this chus up to someone else. You don't find that.
Family means mother and father?
Yes, right, exactly.
In other words, if there's three brothers, and he can be a sandik for each of his sons. In other words, if Reuben
you choose
Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda's son.
For example, I have five sons.
Right. So you can be five times a sandik.
No. But I'm honoring someone else as sandik.
I'm saying b'shah tova when your sons have children.
And I'm a grandfather, for example. Right. We haven't even talked about that. Right. But so then in that kind of a case, according to what the Rambam is saying, the grandfather should only be the sandik once. He should only be the sandik once. Meaning the mother and father of the child should honor a different person with each and every boy.
But what about the mother and father of the father?
But no, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's a grandfather or not. Yeah, no, meaning it's up to them to decide. But they should honor someone else. They can honor the paternal grandfather one time, the maternal grandfather one time, and then they honor other people. And then they pick other people. So that's what this practice is suggesting. Again, the Gra doesn't like the reasoning because he feels that the whole thing, he said, it doesn't make any sense. The reasoning that the Ma'aril gave, that you want to spread the wealth and compared it to the Kohen, the Gra says that's not comparable. Because there, one Kohen did it, he would never do it again. Here we're not saying that I can only serve once as a sandik in my lifetime. We're saying that the family can only choose the same person one time. They can't choose the same person, a second or a third time to be sandik. So the comparison doesn't make any sense. So in the end, he concludes, just give me one second, let me just finish this thought. At the end he concludes, El ha-minig hu al-pi tzavas Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. He says it is based on Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. I looked up the Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. He does mention it. It's very, it's just a one-liner. He doesn't explain, as most of the things in the tzava of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid doesn't give much explanation. But he just says, this was a tzava. In general, with the tzava of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, there's always a question as to whether his tzava, which is essentially like an ethical will, was that meant for all Jews, or was that meant only for his descendants? That seems to be a question, like a kind of a long-term question, what's meant by Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. Many people try to keep the things in the tzava of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, for example, not marrying a kala with the same name as your mother. Right? That comes from the tzava of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. So there are many things that people try to avoid that come from the tzava of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. There are things that people are not so careful about that come from that tzava. So, but that's what the Gra writes is the source for this minhag. It does seem this minhag is a real established minhag, not to give, not to honor the same person twice. But not everyone is so careful about it. Sometimes, if you're like, for example, in the yeshiva setting, where you have the Rosh Yeshiva is always Sandik, so there it would be a dishonor to have a bris in the yeshiva, not to honor the Rosh Yeshiva as Sandik. And not everybody there might know that that you already had a boy, and he was Sandik at your first son's bris. So then, in situations like that, the Rosh Yeshiva is always Sandik. So no matter what, even if it's the second, third boy that this person has had, the Rosh Yeshiva is always Sandik. In most shuls, that's not the case. The rabbi is not always Sandik. Usually the rabbi is not Sandik.
But he's not the family.
I'm sorry?
He's not exactly from the family.
So. No, but it doesn't matter. But according to this logic, whether it's the Tzava Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid or whether it's the logic of the Ma'aril, either way, it doesn't really matter whether the Sandik is a family member or not. It doesn't really matter. The idea is that you only honor one person. You honor one person once and then you move on to someone else. So again, it gets a little tricky. I mean, Baruch Hashem, I've had five boys. You have to look around. We honored my father and we honored my father-in-law and we had to find other people. So, so that was the that is an interesting minhag. now it's very interesting.
Christian.
Yeah.
Can the father also be the sandik?
Yeah.
It's not common though, right?
It's not common. The father can be the sandik. He can be the sandik.
Two hats in the text.
Yeah. Sometimes he doesn't want to, but he can be. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you look at the Magen Avraham, it's very interesting. The Magen Avraham here is talking about, if you look at Siman Reish Pei Beis, which is in Hilchos Shabbos, and he's talking about the halachos of getting an aliyah. And it's very interesting because here he says that he's talking about chiyuvim, what we call chiyuvim for an aliyah, and this is a whole, parsha and shiurim unto themselves in terms of, order and chiyuvim, who's really a chiyuv, who's not a chiyuv, what's the order of chiyuvim and things like that. So he writes that a sandik is a greater chiyuv than the avi haben. So sometimes you have a morning of a bris, and you have the father of the son there, and then you have the sandik at the same minyan. So he says that the aliyah should go to the sandik and not over the avi haben. Now, if the avi haben is a kohen and the sandik is a yisrael, so they can both get aliyahs. But if they're both yisraelim, so then the sandik, he says, should get the aliyah over the avi haben, v'avi haben l'moel, and the avi haben beats out the moel. Right. So the moel, in terms of aliyahs, the moel is the lowest of the totem pole, and then you have the avi haben. And then you have the sandik who's the highest. Then he writes, "V'ish shel yoledes bas kodim la'avia yeled hazachar." Interestingly, right? So a person whose wife gave birth to a daughter takes precedence over a person whose wife gave birth to a son. Okay, maybe because of the baby naming. Okay. Even though generally the baby naming is not necessarily a chiv. You don't need an aliyah to name the baby. It's also a misconception. We discussed this once. You don't need an aliyah to name the baby. Just like you don't need an aliyah to bench gomel. You can bench gomel without an aliyah. So too, you can name a baby without an aliyah as well. People like to have an aliyah also. But there is an idea that after a person has a daughter, he should get an aliyah. Stop, right? Irrespective of the baby naming. For example, let's say he had the baby on Wednesday, and he wants to name the baby on Shabbos. We discussed that, pushing off the baby naming until Shabbos. We discussed that. So let's say he wants to push the baby naming off till Shabbos. So Thursday morning he's in shul, he gets an aliyah. Right? He just had a baby, he gets an aliyah. Now Shabbos, he's naming the baby. Does he have a chiyuv for an aliyah? The answer is no. He had his aliyah already. Right? So his chiyuv already he had on Thursday morning. So now he has to name his daughter. That's beautiful, but you don't need an aliyah. Now, if the shul wants to give you one, that's great. But there's no chiyuv at that point to get an aliyah. Now the fascinating thing here is look how the Magen Avraham concludes. V'yom shemeis bo avi o imo gam kein kodem la'avi hayeled. So he writes that if a person has a yahrzeit, let's say they have a yahrzeit bo bayom on the day of laning, right? So that takes precedence over the father of the child, okay? But implicit in his words, what does it not take precedence over? the sandik. Because he says that a yartzeit beats out the father of the child, but he started out that the sandik beats out the father of the child also. So it seems clear from the words of the Magen Avraham that a sandik really beats out a yartzeit. Right? Tell it to someone who has a yartzeit and see how it goes over. Right? The person's not going to be very happy. But technically speaking, says the Magen Avraham, if you have a sandik and a yartzeit, really the sandik gets the aliyah over the yartzeit. Okay. Just to show you how chashuv this honor of sandik is. Okay. Now it is interesting, as was mentioned, that we do have a practice to try to give it to grandparents, right? To try to give it to either the maternal or the paternal grandparents. This is brought by the Leket Yosha, who was a Talmud of the Rama, lived in the 1400s. If you look in source number 9, so he writes, Chayav liten la'aviv kodem aviv zikno lihios balbris. So he says that if you have, let's say the father of the child has his father and his grandfather. So it's the baby's grandfather and the baby's great-grandfather, right? Like at this past bris, Baruch Hashem, my grandfather's still alive, so my father and my grandfather are both at the bris. So who do I give sandik to? My father or my grandfather? Okay, I'm the father of the child. Who do I give the sandik to? So he says, you got to give it to your father. You have a greater requirement to honor your father. You have a greater chiyuv to honor your grandfather also. But your real chiyuv of kibud av aim, kibud av in this case, is to your father. So you have to give the kavod to your father. Avalim hu beratzon aviv yuchal liten lezikno, right? But if your father agrees, if he says no, give it to Zaidi, right? So then you can give it to your grandfather. Right, but really, your father has kedima; he takes precedence. The aminog litein lezekeno. He says, nevertheless, even though technically you're mechuyev to give your father over your grandfather, he says, but the minog is to give it to your grandfather. That's the minog. Why? Mishum shaolam omrim. Interesting, right? This was written in the 1400s already. Haolam omrim already. People say this, right? It's not clear what the source is. That mishu bal bris leben nino eno roa pnei gehenim. Right, he says people say. That if you're a Baal Bris, if you're a Sandik for a grandchild, for a great grandchild, you don't see Pnei Gehenim. You don't go to Gehenim. Okay? Now, he doesn't bring a source for this. Sha'olam Omrim. Right? People say this. But this is people talk about this. I've heard that people ask Rav Yashiv about this. He says, I don't know, I never heard of it. You know, but he doesn't know what the source is. But it is brought, this at least the rumor is brought by the Leket Yosha that this is something significant. And he said, that's why the minhag is to give for the Avi Aben, for the father of the child, to give his grandfather over his father. But technically, again, the obligation is to give your father. But there is a basis. That we see that there's a basis to give the family members and the grandfather, the great-grandfather. There is a basis for this custom. After the Mila, right after the Mila, we know we discussed last week the brachos, that the mo'el makes the bracha of Asher Kedushanu B'mitzvos V'Tzivanu Ala Mila, and then the father makes the bracha of Asher Kedushanu B'mitzvos V'Tzivanu L'Achnisu B'Mitzvos Shel Avraham Avinu, right, the special bracha that the father makes. We discussed those brachas a little bit last week. So immediately following that bracha, everyone says, and it's based on the Gemara in Shabbos, the Gemara says, after the mo'el says his bracha, the Avi Aben says his bracha, Ha'omdim omrim k'shem shenichnas labris, kach ikonis l'toro l'chupo l'masim tovim. This is brought already from the times of the Gemara, and it's something significant. Why do we say this? Right? Why specifically at the bris do we say, k'ni ikonis l'toro l'chupo l'masim tovim? Why are we saying all these things? So it explains the Abu Draham, one of the Rishonim, in source number 11, and he explains, she'elu, at the end of the first line there, he says, she'elu hein mitzvos haben hamutelas al ha'av. He says, these are the mitzvos that the father has to do for his child, right? The father has to, number one, give him a bris milah, but then, Torah, chuppah, masim tovim, right? So these are the things that the father is obligated to teach his child. The sidra mala seder, and he says, that's why it's in that order, based on the Gemara, based on the Mishnah and Kiddushin. La'olam yilamid adam Torah v'achkach yiseisha, right? First we learn Torah, then we get married, generally speaking, depending on where you live, maybe, says the Gemara. V'yizkir achar kach ma'asim tovim, afal pishu chai v'mitzvos miyom shu ben yud gimel shon av yom echad. So he says, what's ma'asim tovim? So the Avu Draham assumes that ma'asim tovim just means mitzvos, right? Good deeds means mitzvos. Now asks the Avu Draham, one second, but you're already chai v'mitzvos from the time you're 13, right? So why are we saying, keini kanas the Torah chuppah ma'asim tovim? People weren't getting married before 13, before bar mitzvah, right? Even when they got married young, they didn't get married that young. Right, so it should say, You know, it should say Torah mitzvos, Torah masim tovim, and then chuppah. So why is it in the reverse order? He writes, Mikol makom eino ben onshin ad esrim. He says, but you don't get punished until you're 20 by Beis Din, right? You don't get punished until you're 20. Ukvar hoya ben shmona esrei lechuppah. Of course, you're getting married at 18, right? So Torah already when you're young. Ben shmona esrei lechuppah. You're getting married when you're 18, and then 20. Then you have then you're held responsible in terms of punishment for your maisim, for your actions, and that's why we say maisim tovim at that point. What comes next is a bracha. After the milah, it's an interesting bracha, and this is really the last two kibudim that we have at the milah, the last two main kibudim, what are called either the bracha and the kriya shem. Sometimes, you know, one person is honored with that, sometimes it's two different people who are honored with this. Generally, also during the bracha and the kriya shem, we have what's called amida, amida lebrachos, or amida lekriya shem, and that means the person who holds the child. And that's also a big schus based on the Arizal also held that was a big schus to hold the child during the brachos, certainly to hold the child during the kriya shem. It's a tremendous schus. Now, but there's no mention really in the Gemara, even though there is mention of these brachos, and you know the kriya shem obviously we do, but there's no mention in the Gemara of making a bar pri agafen here or doing this over a cup of wine. Now we know that we do. Right, we hold a cup of wine, we make a bar pri agafen before we begin the bracha. So where does this come from? The Abu Dram writes, he brings the minhag already. Again, the Abu Dram lived in the times of the Rishonim, and he writes the Achar Kach in source number 12, Lokeach koshel yayin, mevarech tchila bar pri agafen. You bring a koshel yayin, a cup of wine, you make a bar pri agafen, and you continue with the rest of the bracha. The Beis Yosef points out in number 13. He brings the minhag based on what the Torah writes, and then he says in the middle of the first line there, "Zelo matzasi mevur b'gemara." He says, "I didn't find this anywhere in the Gemara that you have to have a cup of wine at the bris." Doesn't say this anywhere in the Gemara. "Velo b'divrei harifah harambam." He says the Rif and the Rambam don't mention this requirement. "Elash midivrei amafarshim v'hagaonim she'achto b'simin zeh nireshu muska mehakol levarichosa alakos." But if you look around in other sources, many other sources have it. The Rif, the Gemara, the Rif, the Rambam—they don't bring this custom to make a bar pri agafen on a cup of wine at a bris, but many other sources, the right to the Beis Yosef, do bring it. Why is it? Midivrei haMordechai b'Maseches Yuma nireh she'atam mishum damrinon ein omrim shira ela al hayayin. This is based on the Mordechai. You know, we only say shira al hayayin. So maybe we're making this special bracha. Maybe that's a form of shira, or maybe even the kriya shem might be a form of shira. But there's a certain element of shira here, of singing out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, singing out His praises, and that we always do on wine, right? We always do that on wine. So he says, perhaps that's the reason why we have wine at the Bris Milah. Now it's interesting. When do you drink the wine? Or who drinks the wine? Right. So if you look, it's not so clear.
That's the first thing.
Do what?
The bracha of the wine is.
No, you make a bar pri agafen. You don't drink then. Because then you're making another bracha, v'asher kidash yidid mibeten, and then you're doing the kriya shem. Right? So first of all, who's drinking the wine? And second of all, when do you drink it? Okay? So it's interesting. If you look at the Ramah, the Ramah mentions, he talks, there's a long discussion in the poskim about fast days, Yom Kippur, Tisha B'Av. You know, what do you do with the wine? You make a bris on Tisha B'Av, right? What do you do with the wine? Okay? So I was at a bris. I remember being at a bris. I was on one bris on Tisha B'Av in Eretz Yisrael, and they brought the wine to the mother because the mother wasn't fasting. She had just given birth. She wasn't fasting, so they brought the wine to the mother. You know, they brought it over the mechitza to the mother. The Rama writes, interestingly, he writes that when it comes to Yom Kippur, he writes of Yom Kippurim noagin litein latino kanimo. Right, so there he says you give it to the baby. Right, the baby, who's the rachanimo. You give the baby a little bit of the wine, and he tastes the wine. Kemoshin hisbar barachayim, simin tofreish chaf aleph. There's a whole question about what about giving it to a katan, but many poskim are opposed to giving it to a katan, because maybe he's going to learn, you know, he's going to think, oh yeah, I remember Yom Kippur, my mother gave me wine to drink, you know, the rabbi of the shul gave me wine to drink. So he's too small. Exactly, the baby's too young, he's not going to remember. So, but an older child you don't want to give, so that's why they give the baby. V'yesh Omer writes the Rama. Interesting. Listen to this. V'yesh Omer, in the name of the Kobo, Da'af below Tainus Yotzin Bazeh. Writes the Rama. Forget about Tainus. Forget Yom Kippur. He says every day you have a bris. Give it to the baby. Right. He says you don't have to drink it. He says give it to the baby. You give the baby a drink. You give him a few drips of wine in his mouth, and that's it. That's good enough.
Can
How much has to be drunk?
That's a good question, right? So you know, normally for a kosher bracha, we drink a male lugmav. Right? We drink a cheekful. So obviously you're not giving a cheekful to the baby. He'll choke, right? So you can't give a cheekful, but you know, even with the Yevit, sometimes if you drink less than a male lugmav, you're still yotzei. Also, it's not so clear that this, you know, what type of a kosher bracha this is. It's not so clear. Because the whole source of having this kos, it's not so clear where it comes from. You know, as, I'm sorry? Until he stops crying. Right, it's not so clear. I mean, that's what the Beis Yosef said. He said it's not. There's no source in the Gemara for this. There's no source in the Rif and the Rambam. So certain Sfarim have this, but it's not so clear. It might not have this. It might not be like a kosher bracha. It's not like Kiddush and Havdalah. There, it's, you know, we're required to make it over wine. We don't have a choice. It's not there. It is discussed in the Gemara. So here, it might suffice just to have even less, even a mashu. You know, the baby has a little something, so maybe that's good enough. But he writes the Rama.
Not necessarily off course.
I'm sorry?
Not necessarily off
course.
No.
Oh, no. Rov course. No. For kosher bracha? No. Pesach. Right? Adal kosos. Aval ein noag in kein ela hasandik shosa kisha eno tanis. So writes the Rama, that's not our minhag. Our minhag is that the sandik drinks. Now it's very interesting because he doesn't say the person who makes the bracha. He says the sandik. Right? So that means that there's somebody making the bar priya gofen. Okay, and he makes the bracha of Asher Kiddush you did me better, and then he turns around and he gives the kos to the sandik. Okay, he doesn't drink. Now, as strange as that sounds, that you have somebody making a bar pri agafen and somebody else drinking, it does sound a little bit strange. It's not the first. It's not the only time we have this. First of all, very often at a chasana, you have the masada kiddush makes the bar pri agafen, and who drinks? Chasan and kala. Now there is a discussion about that. A famous Pnei Yoshua, right? How can you have somebody making a bracha and not drinking? Right, but most poskim don't have a problem with it. You make the bracha, and they'll drink. Okay. Maybe something like that. Maybe something like that.
So why can't the chassan make the bracha?
Why can't he make the bracha?
Yeah.
I mean, he's the one who's doing the mitzvah. So generally, you know, it's somebody. Why can't he? I mean, if the chassan makes the bracha, you probably yotze. I don't know. I've never seen it done. I've never seen it. He's too fatrach. He's gonna mess up. He's gonna make a shahakol or something. He's not thinking straight. But he anyway. But that's the so he writes that the sandik. Another time, by the way, also Friday night. Very often we have a minhag in shul to make kiddush in shul. And who do you give it to? A child, right? Because the person's not being yotzei kiddush. If no one's there, then he drinks it. Right? He drinks a little bit. But we do have this. So we do have a precedent for such a thing. It's interesting. The Shach, right there on that Ramah in source number 15, writes, "Uvechol amakomo shehayisi ein noagin kein." He says, "I've never seen this minhag that the Ramah says to give it to the sandik." He says, "Elanos nim lishtos lenaarim ketanim." He says, "You give it to kids." Okay, so even the Shach, the person making the bracha was not drinking, right? So the Ramah says you give it to the sandik. The Shach says you give it to little kids who are at the bris. Nobody says that the person drinking. Drinks the kos. The Chachmas Adam is not happy with this. If you look at source number 16, he writes, "Hanachon shehasandik o hashamish yishte kulo o male lugmav kedin kol davar shetolun kos." He says, "One second." He says, "You got to treat this like a regular kos shel bracha. So you have to drink a male lugmav. So either the sandik has to drink a male lugmav, or the shamish has to drink a male lugmav." Again, nobody seems to be too bothered that the person making the bracha is not doing it. You know, maybe that's what he means by a shamish. But anyway, but that's the that is the requirement. I'm sorry?
Why doesn't anyone say the father?
I don't know. It's a good question. Now nowadays, you know, sometimes they'll give it back to the Mavarech. I mean, now I haven't really seen, you know, people giving to the Sandik to drink. I'm trying to think. I can't remember when I was in Yeshiva. I never paid attention to that late in the bris. You know, you have to pay attention where the kos is going after the bracha. But nowadays, very often the Mavarich will drink it. Sometimes you look around, it's like nobody's drinking. You know, they finish, because they finish the bracha, and they do the Kriya Shem, and the kos is just sitting there, like nobody's drinking from it. So somebody has to drink from it. You know, either the Sandik or the Mavarich. There's also a question, even if the Mavarich is drinking, when does he drink? Because they use the kos for the Kriya Shem also. So do you drink after the Kriya Shem? Is the Kriya Shem a hefsik between the Bar Priya Gafen and the drinking? Is it an interruption? Do I have to drink right after the bracha? Can I wait till after the kriya shem? So it's not so clear. So what some people do is they, you know, sometimes they shake a little bit and they get a little bit on their fingers. This is what also some rabbis do at chuppas. You know, I'll teach you a little rabbinic trick. But some rabbis, you know, they shake it a little bit, they get some on their fingers, so then they make a bara priyagraf and they give it to the chasan and kala, and then they discreetly take a little lick. So that way they also, they made a bracha, and they got a little hana from the wine. So sometimes people will do that also at the thing. So if you see a rabbi licking his fingers under the chuppah, you'll know why. But okay, now just to conclude with the seuda, we know that after the bris milah we have a minhag to have a seuda. Now, interestingly, this seuda many hold should be fleishiks. That should be a fleishik seuda. If you go to Eretz Yisrael, very often people have fleishiks. Right? You have. I remember when I went to Eretz Yisrael, you go to a bris. 8 o'clock in the morning, you have schnitzel and kugel, right? You have it's a fleishik suda. It's a suda shel mitzvah. So the Rama writes in source number 17 that we know that we don't eat meat during the 3 weeks, right, or during the 9 days. So he writes umatzniim meirosh chodesh in hilchas tishabav umatzniim meirosh chodesh ve'elach hasakin shoshchita. He says you take from rosh chodesh of during the 9 days. You take your knife. Okay, so we eat meat during the 3 weeks, we just don't eat during the 9 days. So he writes, Rosh Chodesh, you take your shechita knife, put it away. Put it away in the closet, you hide it. Well, you don't have to do shechita, right? You're not doing shechita for anything. I mean, nowadays you have these big plants, so they can do shechita, even though you know nobody's going to eat the chicken for another week or two, but they could still do it. But here he says, you hide the knife. Shein shechtim ki'im letzorech mitzvah. You know, you only shech during the 9 days for a mitzvah. Can go in the chole for a person who's sick, o Shabbos, o Mila. Opinion Aben. Since you're shechting for a milah, why are you shechting for a milah? Right? For the suda. So you see clearly. Some say even more clearly than that you have to have fleishiks at the suda. There are people obviously who have milchiks. I myself just made a bris milah. We had milchiks at the suda. I don't think anybody would have come if we had fleishiks. In America, many people make milchik sudas. Some poskim are not so happy about it. Some poskim say it's okay. It still brings you simcha. You have nice. You know, you have fish. You have lox. You have white fish. It also engenders simcha. This also relates a little bit to the topic of eating milchiks on yontif. You know, people have a yontif suda. Can you have fish and things like that? Milchiks on yontif relates to that. So there is what to rely on to have a milchik suda. But if you see people making a fleishik suda for a bris milah, you'll know where it comes from. Okay. The Rabbeinu Bachaya in source number 18, we don't have time to see it inside, but he just writes that we discussed earlier the connection between a milah and karban, right? And we said even the knees of the sandik are like the mizbeach. So he says so too, just like eating, the karban is a kapara, gives you an atonement for any sins that you've done. So too, eating at the suda of a bris milah gives you a kapara. There's some element of kapara because of this. The Shulchan Aruch writes, the Rama, I'm sorry, writes in source number 19, the komisheina ocha besudas milah have a kimenuda lashamayim. A person who doesn't eat at a sudas milah, you go to a bris milah, and you don't eat. It's like you're in chayrim. You're in chayrim from shamayim. It's not a good thing. You know, you're coming to a suda. It's a kapara. It's something very chashuv. You know, you don't go to a sudas bris milah and not eat. Based on that, the Pesachei Tshuva writes in source number 20, the tov levatel masha hashamash kori al sudas bris milah. He says you shouldn't invite people. Don't invite people to the sudas bris milah. Why? Because if you invite someone and they don't come, it's like what the Rama says. It's like you're a menuda lashamayim. So that's why the general minhag has become to inform people, right? You inform people. You let them know that there is a milah taking place, not actually inviting. If you invite them and they don't come, so then it's already like a little bit of a slap in the face, a little bit of a chutzpah. We also say it's an additional reason is also Eliyahu HaNavi. We mentioned once also that Eliyahu HaNavi is coming. Right? He's coming. You can't make it. Right? Eliyahu HaNavi is coming. You can't make it to the Suda. So that's another reason not to invite people. You don't want them to hear the invitation and say, oh, you know, I can't come today. You know, even though Eliyahu HaNavi is going to be there, I'm too busy. So these are two reasons why we don't invite people to a bris milah, but we just make an announcement or inform them that a bris milah is taking place. Okay, we'll stop here for tonight. Next week we'll continue with the halachos of Pidyon HaBen.